free.
The Sports Line on WRMJ and WRMJ.com.
He breaks free. He's inside the 20, the 10, the 5.
A weekly in-depth look at the local high school sports scene.
Touchdown, Mercer County. Touchdown, Golden Eagles.
Sportsline is brought to you by your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, auto, farm, or business.
Get a launch of three at the gun. No good, and the Rockets have won the game. The Rockets head back to state.
By 6140 Running Galesburg, your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots.
A three at the gun is no good, and this game is over! The Tigers have won! They're going to celebrate! Purple and gold converging on the Don Morris Gymnasium floor! Unbelievable!
By Diamond Ag, your local ag retailer supplier, built from your local specifications with locations in Alito, Alexis, and Knoxville.
She throws the first three in a row for Lockridge! The Rockets have won three state titles in a row in softball.
And by Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. And now, from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Alito, here's Jim Taylor and Ty Taylor with Sportsline.
It is the WMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning, a longtime tradition that started at this great local radio station back in 1979. I'm Jim Taylor. Ty Taylor is alongside. We're at the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Alito. Before we get to our guest or in-studio guest, have we confirmed yet? Is Dale Jones, is he going to go to the state tournament with us?
I don't know.
Year?
I haven't seen him at the station yet.
Well, yeah. He was in here last week, and I forgot to ask him.
I wasn't here when he was
that.
Here, I guess.
All right. So we have a great in-studio guest today, and this is how I'll start with my, like, mini rant. So we know, like, on social media, the bad things about social media. Yeah, there's a lot of that here with these times we live in with people giving their hot takes, but there are also great things. And one of the things that caught my attention this school year, and I said, you know, we need to get this person on and talk a little bit about this, maybe, you know, a little bit beyond sports or it overlaps with sports. And I know Coach Brandon Johnston, the head football coach at Sherrard, he's involved in something that's called Sherrard Core Leadership for both junior high and high school kids. So I like to learn about things like that and promote things that go inside of the building. So Ty Taylor lined up, Brandon Johnston. Give us the skinny, the thumbnail sketch, Sherrard Core Leadership involves what? And good to see you, and thanks for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, and first time in this place, so it's beautiful. You guys have done a great job.
Welcome.
Here.
So when you talk about, you know, the core leadership program, I'm just kind of curious the idea where it comes from and just kind of the inception of getting it started, because I think it was the first school year this has been put together, right?
Yeah, so I'll try to give you the brief version here. It actually started last summer as a kind of a football initiative with our football program. We felt like we had a heck of a lot of kids that always did the right thing, kids that made good decisions, but really wanted to expand on the leadership specific aspect of it. So we kind of started it last June, I think, with just the football program. I met with my staff and we kind of put a little bit of a plan together, but there really wasn't much specific direction. We kind of just did it like once a week, maybe. And it was very, very kind of random. We would throw something together, find something over the weekend or things like that. Carried that throughout the football season and thought it was beneficial, but after the season just kind of decided to pump the brakes a little bit. We just thought it could have been better, and met with some people, tried to put some heads together, and really thought we needed, with something like this, we thought it was incredibly beneficial, but we needed to be better with it. So we pumped the brakes after football season, kind of got some people together, formed a little committee. And we really thought a few things. Number one, what an incredible opportunity for our kids if we do this the right way, which was really kind of the main thing. What did leadership look like for us? And what did we want Sherrard students to do, to say, how to act and stuff like that? Like what was important to us? So we got a committee together. I think it was at the end of first semester, maybe, and then bled over a little bit to the start of second semester before we got things rolling with this club in February, I think. And you know, we wanted to make sure that we included as many kids as possible. It, you know, that's was one of the things. Like I said, I started it with the football program, but I thought that that's kind of silly. Let's impact more kids. Let's give many kids the opportunity. So met with Lisa Emmendorfer initially, our athletic director. We kicked around the idea of maybe just an athletic specific club. Then I met with Brady Stromquist, our new junior high principal this year, and we kicked around the junior high idea, and that's kind of where it started from. We decided we were going to open it up to every junior high and high school student, and obviously the more people like this that we can reach with a program like this, we thought the better.
And I was going to say, the one thing I like about it is it you know, both junior high and high school students are involved. And I think, you know, just looking, and you can follow, if you're listening at home, you can go to the Facebook page, Sherrard Court Leadership. And like, for example, I see one of the topics that you're looking at with the Sherrard Court Leadership, and I think this was posted just 2 days ago, talking about resiliency. Brainstorm and develop a list of 10 ways that teens can help themselves and others be resilient. Think about what strategies work for me when I'm faced with a difficulty, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we need to, I think those are the type of things we need to learn more about, because more times than not, we suffer a defeat or a setback, or specifically we're told no, and we have to be able to deal with something like that.
Yeah, when we sat down as a committee, and like I said, we really wanted more of a direction than what I had kind of done with our football program. It was, like I said, I thought it was decent, but it needed to be better. So we kind of sat down and developed, you know, those four pillars that make up our core program: competitiveness, ownership, resiliency, and empowerment. And those were kind of the traits that we felt that we wanted to see out of Sherrard students. You know, so we definitely have developed more of kind of a curriculum, I guess, if you want to call it that. And we've got a pretty good direction, I think, on this program now. So, you know, trying to touch the first, I think we've had 4 or 5 meetings now at both the junior high and high school. And I think we've touched on each of those pillars to start with, and kind of given our kids an exposure and an explanation as to what we want to see out of them and why those things are important. So, you know, moving forward, we want to try to put our kids in situations where they can practice some of those new skills and you know, come up, as you said, this week we worked with resiliency and, you know, come up with ways that we can be resilient when given difficult situations. So kids have done a really good job with it so far.
Yeah. So with this, the core leadership program, I mean, what does like a typical meeting look like? And then you talked about their wanting to, you know, see it in practice. How do you put it, I guess, in practice too? Like, just what kind of does that process look like, I guess, so far in the early stages?
Yeah, it's, you know, trying to get kids to do new things sometimes is a struggle. And we didn't know what exactly we were going to have for a turnout those first couple of weeks, especially, and just been really pleased with the number of kids that have committed to doing this. So, you know, we try to just define our program, I guess, the first few weeks with our kids, and then come up with scenarios where they can put some of these things into practice. You know, because I think it's very much in my mind, it's something that eventually our kids are going to have to be very active in for them to get the most benefit out of this. So, you know, I think they can hear things from us as teachers, as coaches, as adults. You know, we've got some guest speakers lined up in the very near future for this leadership group as well. But eventually they're going to have to be able to do the things themselves. So, that's where it's going to be up to us, I think, as a committee to come up with those scenarios and let kids practice those situations.
And I think too, it's interesting because like when you talk about resiliency, you know, that can mean something different for one of those students, say, for example, if they're not involved in athletics or if they are, and, you know, background creates maybe some differences in resiliency. For example, you know, if you're economically disadvantaged, you know, resiliency maybe means something a little bit different. So that's what I think has to be pretty interesting about, you know, probably maybe some of the cross-section of the students you get and seeing what resiliency means to them, because I know it can have a different definition and meaning because of circumstance.
Yeah, absolutely. The first, actually, I think it was the very first meeting that we met with our kids. We had them brainstorm what leadership looks like in their minds and to think about who the best leaders are that they've been around. And the idea was to kind of get them to come up with different ways that leadership can look and get the message across to them that everybody's capable of it. It just looks a little bit different from one person to the next. You know, my leadership style is a little bit different than the next person's, but we believe that everybody can be leaders in some capacity. So, yeah, you know, I think we've got this program developed, and as you said, I think you hit it absolutely. It's something that's going to look a little bit different from kid to kid, and they'll be able to apply it probably in different ways in their lives. But you know, ultimately, it's something that we believe these kids are starting to learn some skills now that we think is very unique. We haven't found very many places around that have done something like this. We think we're giving Sherrard kids a very unique opportunity. And, you know, something that hopefully they'll have for the rest of their lives.
Well, something I've liked kind of following from afar, just like on social media, the program, and you talked about this a little bit earlier too, but it feels like you've got great support, like throughout the school district, really from the administration to the staff down, you know, to the kids in the program. So, I mean, with the first year of this whole thing kind of in full swing for the full student body, I mean, do you feel that support, I think, from the school district with it? Because like I said, it looks like it's off to a pretty good start.
Yeah, absolutely. It's honestly been, you know, I don't want to say surprising, but I've been very, very pleased with the amount of support that we've got, the amount of interest that we've had. Again, from our side of it, you never know when you start something new like this, how it's going to be received and stuff like that. But it's been incredibly well received. You know, we've got a couple administrators from our district that are on our committee, a couple teachers and coaches. You know, we've got five or six different people that are on our committee. And one of the things that we've really talked about as a committee as we've kind of evaluated this the first few weeks is we're pretty proud of the fact that we've got a lot of kids that keep coming back. We've got a lot of repeat. You know, it's a before school deal. So they're getting there 20-25 minutes before school on their own choosing. And it's important to us to see a lot of those kids coming back for more. We think that's kind of a, you know, a little bit of an evaluation piece for us. It tells us we're hopefully doing some good things, but, you know, it's been very well received from outsiders as well. Obviously people within our district, we've had some families that have donated to like some breakfast for our kids and stuff like that. You know, we've had teachers, coaches, administrators, all the way up to a couple superintendents that have contacted us and been curious, you know, what we're doing and how we're doing it. And for us, at least, again, from the evaluative standpoint, we're very pleased with a lot of those things. It tells us, I think, that we're doing something very special for our kids at Sherrard.
And I think the other unique part about this is, you know, I know you're the head football coach. And this is not about interscholastic athletics or our core leadership, but it applies to interscholastic athletics. And how does it apply to interscholastic athletics, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in my mind, I ended up kind of in a long way kind of going about this backwards. I started it within the football program. And I just really believe that it's something that every single kid in our school can benefit from. I really, truly believe that. And we've had a great turnout, and you know, you talk about things like leadership and culture within your school and stuff like that. And you know, the more kids that we expose to this program, you know, in theory, hopefully the better our leadership's going to be within our school, the better our culture is going to be within our kids and our school. So you know, some of the things that we've talked about too is, you know, when we've got a 16-year-old who just gets his license and wants to go apply for a job and on a job application, you know, some of those kids a few years from now that do that, they're going to be able to put on their job application that they've been a part of a leadership development program for 3 or 4 years at that time. You know, high school graduates applying to college, applying to the military, going out to the workforce, they're going to be able to list this program on resumes and applications and stuff like that. And we think that's something that's going to set kids apart from Sherrard.
So I was going to say too, I was thinking about as people are listening to this program, and we have a wide array of listeners that listen to this program. We have a whole bunch of listeners that listen.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
So there may be some out there that are saying, hey, I'm listening to this coach or this teacher at Sherrard, and I like what he's saying, and I want to be involved, or I'd like to speak to these students that are involved in this Sherrard Core Leadership Program. So I mean, would you know, take that on and say, hey, yeah, we'd like to hear from you if you want to participate, or if I can help some way. Are you looking for that type of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a, at least as of this second, it's not a specific organized official club. We are tying it into one of our other clubs that we just call our varsity club at Sherrard. And that's kind of the goal, kind of just starting that this week and what that process looks like. But yeah, so I mean, it's been kind of just an informal meeting up to this point. And again, we've got a pretty good idea where we want to go directionally with this thing. You know, people can help and support these kids in this program. You can reach out to me, johnstonb@sherrard.us, if you're interested in helping out. We're considering guest speakers as well. Like I said, we've got a couple lined up already, so that's something that we'd definitely be interested in. Our goal with that is to find people who have been incredibly successful in their own career paths, not just things like teachers and coaches and stuff like that in the academic world. But, you know, we've got guys lined up from the private sector that are interested and willing to help out, you know, not just Sherrard alums, but we've got Sherrard alums that have been reaching out and want to get involved. So, yeah, it's definitely something that we'd be interested in talking to people about.
And I think just the example of you mentioned that, that's what I think kids are always looking at is, hey, what is the example out there that maybe, or my path, can I do I feel that I could associate with something like that? And I think that's awesome if you have guest speakers. So I like what I'm hearing here, I guess.
Well, when you talk about, you know, all the benefits potential you could see down the line, like you said earlier, you know, kids can put this on resumes for, you know, part-time jobs while they're in school or looking at college applications or applications to something, you know, post graduating high school. With that, I mean, I think when something is successful like this and it's kind of a new thing, like you said, there aren't too many, maybe no other schools around the area are doing this. Sometimes you'll see, you know, people in other schools try to imitate things that work. So if you have like advice to, you know, another school district maybe who is listening to this and wants to say, hey, maybe this is something we could try with our students. I mean, what advice do you have to try to get something like this, you know, off the ground and get it started in the right direction, I guess?
Yeah, I think you you bring up a good point. I certainly don't want to sound like the genius that came up with this idea because it absolutely wasn't. It was something, like I said, that we just kind of as a football staff knew that we wanted to do something to help that aspect of our program, and it grew into what it is now. But I've got to thank one of my friends. He's not from this area, but Scott Battis is the athletic director at Mascoutah High School down by St. Louis, and I follow him on social media. I coached with him many years ago, and he's got things rolling down there at Mascoutah, and he developed a program like this. And in terms of format and stuff like that, it's very similar to what we do here at Sherrard. And so I want to thank Scott. Again, I'm not sure if he'll hear this, but I think it's important for me still to thank him because he's been a great guy for me to lean on and bounce ideas off of, and been very supportive of this. He kind of knows what we're doing with it and stuff like that. You know, for us, I guess, in terms of advice for others, for us, we considered, you know, there's all sorts of stuff out there that you can purchase, kind of pre-made programs and stuff like that. And we talked about those things. We looked at a few different options, but ultimately for us, it came down to what we know our kids best and what do we want from our kids? What do we want to see? What do our kids need? What's going to help our kids stand out? And, you know, for sure, we're taking ideas from all sorts of different resources. But ultimately for us, that's what we really kind of fell back on is we know what our kids need. We think we do at least. And we know what we want to see out of our kids. So we kind of decided let's develop our own little curriculum here, you know, because what we need maybe at Sherrard, you know, what we think our kids need is maybe a little bit different than what maybe kids at Mercer County or Rockridge or Orion maybe need. You know, it's maybe different than Moline and Rock Island. So I think that's, to me, that's a really important aspect of this is, you know, finding something unique for your kids and finding something that you think is really going to be beneficial for your specific audience.
Well, you talked about earlier how, you know, this isn't just like an athletic thing. And it sounds like to me, like in terms of the kids who are, you know, participating in this, it sounds like it's kind of a wide variety of maybe demographics of kids, you know, in the school with, you know, maybe some athletes, some kids who are into, you know, whatever. Is that what you kind of seen in terms of kids who have shown up where it's been kind of maybe a wide range of, you know, the different types of kids you see in a high school of like 400, 450-ish kids?
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely, you know, those groups of kids, it doesn't surprise you. You just kind of expect it almost, those kids to show up. But, you know, we take attendance at this and, you know, we're looking at things for, you know, to like reward kids for, you know, 90 or 100% attendance, which is another way maybe some people can get involved. There's another little plug for me. But yeah, we're looking at, you know, ways to reward kids. And, as we kind of flip back through our attendance, there are some surprises and, you know, that's obviously a good thing. We want, like I said, to be able to reach as many kids with this as we possibly can.
And then what's been the feedback from the kids? If you've got any specific from, you know, the kids who have showed up, you talked earlier about how you've had a lot of kids, you know, be kind of repeat, you know, kids who have shown up over and over at these meetings. So just, you know, both from the junior high level and the high school level, what's been the feedback you've got from the kids who have been, you know, actually in the program?
Yeah, it's been really good. You know, I think the kids are excited. You know, there's always that, you know, with anything new, I think there's always some kind of natural excitement with it. You know, but now that we're 4 or 5 weeks or so, 4 or 5 meetings, I guess, in, we meet every other week, but we're 4 or 5 meetings in with both our junior high and high school. And again, to see those repeat kids, continue to show up and stuff like that, that's been a pretty good indicator, we think, in our minds, at least. It's been very well received. Our kids are excited. We try to keep things, a little bit different from meeting to meeting. You know, so it doesn't get monotonous, hopefully, for our kids. But yeah, we've received some pretty good feedback from them as well.
Again, the Facebook page is Sherrard Core Leadership. You can find out more there. Now, do we want to change direction, talk some other stuff with Coach Johnson?
We can talk some football with him if he wants to.
well, but before we go that direction, I always like to talk career path. And so we've been talking about leadership. And I know when I talk to a lot of coaches that have done it for a while, you've been a coach for how long now? How many years?
I'm in my 18th year teaching and 19 years coaching now.
So a kid that grew up in Cambridge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Coached, we know your success when you were at Anawan Weathersfield in the LTC. Did you know at a young age, you know, you wanted to be an educator and a coach? And I guess the segue is, you know, leadership probably maybe looked a little bit different early in your career. Because I know when you kind of initially get into it as a young coach, it's like, you know, I want to coach football. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And then you realize when you look back, wait, maybe I need to maybe approach this a little bit different. And that's what career and professional development is all about. Brandon Johnston 19 years ago is a lot different than Brandon Johnston in 2025, right?
Yeah, in my opinion, I'd be ridiculous and silly if I didn't look different. You know, that's part of you know, being a lifelong learner, hopefully, and continuing to grow and push myself and push others around me. But yeah, I didn't. I was one of those students in high school that I didn't really know for sure. I knew I was college bound. I didn't really know for sure what I wanted to do until probably too late, probably March or so, maybe, of my senior year of high school before I finally decided where I was going to go, which was Augustana College. I didn't go to Augustana with the idea necessarily of becoming a teacher. That was one of my plans. But I had considered, I knew I wanted to be involved with helping other people. If I could stay involved in athletics, that would have been obviously a big part of my decision as well. So I was looking at things like physical therapy, athletic training, and eventually kind of thought about, you know, I got to make a decision here. For me, outside of my parents, the most impactful people in my life have been my teachers and coaches that I've had. And it kind of came down to that as my decision to get into this career path. You know, I wanted to have that same impact on other students that my teachers and coaches have had on me, and the help that they've given me and the guidance that they've given me. So that was kind of the determining factor for me, you know, is to go down this career path.
So it's interesting. I always like to talk to people and get their view from their lens. So a small school kid in Cambridge, right? So and then a guy that coached at Anawan Weathersfield. So I told Ty when we got you on, I said, you know, I'd like to kind of get his impression of where we're at with the really small schools. And you've seen the evolution of eight-man football. You've seen firsthand, you know, what co-ops are all about. I mean, and I'm talking about those schools that have 100 kids or less than 100, or, you know, 150 or less. I mean, when you look at a sport like football and the evolution of the numbers and then factoring between 8-man and 11-man, you know, and we know football has become such a numbers game now, even at 11-man football, where if you can get 40 out, you feel good. And back in the days, you wanted 60 probably. How do you see like that small school football and those decisions, those conversations about 8-man and I guess an 11-man football? And you know, you're a kid that grew up in Cambridge, so you see that at your alma mater right now.
Yeah, I think for me, it's certainly a decision that's you know, a local decision. What's going to be best for your community, your school, your district, potential co-op partners? You know, is that going to be a good fit, or you know, do we stay on our own? Do we need to go to 8-man, stuff like that? You know, ultimately for me, I think you know, if I were in some of those you know, administration and school board member position, stuff like that, it's all about what's going to be best for our kids. You got to find your path and what's going to be best for your situation and your kids. And that's obviously unique. It's a little bit different from one place to the next. You know, I'm not a sports specialization person. I was a 3-4 sport athlete growing up, and I just believe in the value of competing and competing for your school. And then obviously now as a teacher and coach, you know, giving kids those opportunities to go out and compete for their school. And, you know, I think there's a lot of different factors that are contributing to the numbers issue. I don't think that the numbers issue is just a football issue. I think it's most glaring maybe in my mind in football, but, you know, I think it comes down to, you know, choices that kids have. And, you know, a little bit how they're raised, obviously, influences parents and teachers and coaches in their lives. And, you know, we're going to keep fighting for what's best for our kids. I know at Sherrard and, you know, as a parent, obviously I'm going to keep doing the same thing, but, yeah, there's just a lot of other options right now for kids. And, what I always like to tell kids is compete now. I've truly never in a 19-year career had a kid come up to me after high school and say something like, you know, I really regret working as hard as I worked. You know, that doesn't happen. And you hear stories, unfortunately, all the time of, gosh, I really wish I would have worked a little bit harder. I wish I would have tried this sport. I wish I would have tried this club. You know, you hear those all the time, but you really don't hear kids, I don't think ever in my 19 years, say, gosh, I did too much. I worked too hard and I regret mm-hmm. that doesn't happen. So, how we can continue to deliver that message to kids, you know, obviously that's part of it too. So, you know, just ultimately try to do what you believe is best for kids.
Well, speaking about, you know, participation numbers, kind of piggybacking off of that, you mentioned earlier how it's, you know, nearly 20 years for you, two decades of coaching, you know, interscholastic athletics and football at the high school level, where I think, you know, like we touched on earlier too, the numbers have dropped and it's kind of a different, you know, culture, I feel like, now, where even when I was in school, which is like, you know, 8-9 years ago, it was one of those things where, you know, you had to come to everything in the summer. You weren't going to, you know, they maybe not even going to let you be on the team. Now I know you got to be a little bit more maybe lenient with that stuff and cater to the kids a little bit more because you need them to come out and play. So just for you over your career, I mean, the evolution of that aspect of it in terms of, you know, the participation numbers. I mean, what have been some of the differences you've seen in how you try to maybe combat that, you know, at Sherrard specifically?
Yeah, that's something to this day, you know, just this week, talking to Alex Johnson, our basketball coach, a little bit, we've got some conflicts that are a good thing, doing a little work on our gym floor at Sherrard, and that's going to cause him to move his camps off of his typical June schedule and bleed into July, which is typically a football time for us. But you know, we've got a lot of good people that work together. It's a pretty easy relationship. That's just one example, but that's a pretty easy relationship with me and Alex, I think, because we're both very like-minded, and we got to give kids as many opportunities as we can. And we can't pull kids a bunch of different directions. You know, as much as we'd love to, you know, as much as I'd love to have, you know, year-round football and develop kids that way, like I said earlier, I truly don't believe in that. I believe in kids competing. You know, if you're playing baseball right now, you know, you need to be 100% committed to that. And, you know, we'll worry about football stuff and camp in July and August through November or whatever. But, You want to be committed to your in-season sport and you know, just hopefully give as many opportunities as we can to kids. And that takes some work from everybody involved, you know, leadership position like Mrs. Emmendorf for our activities director, and her guidance to us as coaches and making sure that we're sharing athletes. That's critical. You know, I've seen it obviously at the small school level, that's important, but even at the large school level, that, you know, a lot of those really good athletes at the large schools are multi-sport athletes and they've got to be able to share athletes as well.
I know it, for me, it's always been interesting following kind of this storyline, doing it for 35 years about which is the right way to do it. Cause I remember when I first, you know, burst on the scene, it was, oh, we need to play year round more. We got to, you know, 11 months a year, got to work this much in the off season. And then you go the other way. Well, maybe less is more. And I don't know what the balance is. You know, it used to be more is more. Now it's less and more, less is more. I don't know what the, you know, finding the balance and then, you know, what circumstances are in play. How difficult is it to try and read that equation? I just can't imagine what that is like nowadays.
Yeah, the word that you said is absolutely correct. It's balance. You've got to have balance with your kids. You know what I love to do more with our football players? Yes, of course, but not to the point where you want to wear them out. You know, the discussion that I have with a lot of people about youth sports is, you know, I've got a second grader and a kindergartner and you know, we just finished up basketball and looking into getting ready for soccer and baseball now. And what I always say to people is, I want my kids, my two boys, at the end of every season, you know, I want them to say, gosh, I wish we had two more weeks of soccer.
Yeah.
As opposed to, gosh, we still have 2 weeks of soccer left, you know.
And unfortunately, I'm not using that example, but I'm saying more often than not, kids are saying what you just said.
They are. Absolutely. And that's critical, I think, in my unexpert opinion, at the youth sport level especially. But, I mean, even at the high school level, keeping kids obviously interested and wanting them to come back and not burning them out, it is. And the word you said is balance, and that's absolutely correct.
I was thinking about, you know, back to kind of the small school setting, and you were at Anawan Weathersfield for how many years? Were you 10 years?
10 years, yep.
And, you know, it's interesting for me because when you look at kind of the history and tradition of those schools operating independently, pretty impressive. And then I think, well, how does that come together and work as a co-op? Because I was thinking about this a lot this week because we're, you know, our consolidated district in Mercer County School District is still dealing with some growing pains in the aftermath of this referendum with these social media posts. You see, well, you're like, man, there's still apparently a divide. Now, they haven't mentioned anything about sports related, but I'm still saying there's like a divide with a portion of this district. How, outside of winning, which you won a lot at Anawan Weathersfield, I know that cures a lot of stuff, but outside of winning, what else helps a mesh point when two communities or two schools have to come together and try, as I hate to use, I'm going to use it and you're going to say, don't say it, row the boat, PJ Fleck, there I did, in the right direction, kill me now. But what makes it work, you think, outside of winning? When you talk about, and you're seeing that more and more, whether it be, you know, Ridgewood and even, you know, long before your time with the Sherrard School District with Winola coming together, how do you make it work, you think?
Yeah, I think, I guess several things pop into my head. The first and most important is top-down leadership. You know, your school board members, your administration, they've got to all be on the same page with you as teachers and coaches. Obviously, as you said, winning helps. But you can't have people pulling different directions, pulling against each other. I know my first handful of years at Anawan Weathersfield, there were some struggles that we didn't have by year 7, 8, 9, 10. You know, and now they've been together probably close to 20 years, I guess, off the top of my head. Those kids that, and I'll just, you know, use that example because I was there for 10 years, but those kids now, the kids don't know any different. They've been Anawan Weathersfield Titans for their whole life. Mm-hmm. You know, It's getting everybody else to buy in, which I know is hard. You know, I'm still a Cambridge Viking in my mind, but they're Ridgewood Spartans, you know. So we've got nephews and stuff like that over there. And we try to support them obviously as best we can too. But getting everybody I think to understand and everybody meaning everybody, community members, the works, getting everybody to understand that, look, we're ultimately making decisions for what we believe is going to be best for our kids. And that's what it comes down to. You know, is it 8-man football or is it 11-man football? Do we need to co-op? Do we need to consolidate? It's all about what's best for kids and giving our kids the best opportunities. And, there's certainly going to be differences of opinions, but you know, you got to go with those majority decisions and majority votes sometimes. And, ultimately just try to understand, hey, everybody hopefully wants what's best for kids. And I believe that's the case pretty much everywhere, but, there's going to be some conflict sometimes too.
All right. So let's get to Sherrard football. So I feel bad because I think you've been a little bit of a victim of circumstance at Sherrard. And I look to two things that specifically come to mind for me. So this year, the week zero game, I think on the first snap, you lose the weekly kid who's a good athlete, had a good wrestling season. And I know when you don't have a lot of numbers and you move one, or you lose one or maybe two or probably special teams, three or four positions with one kid missing, that means you have to switch this kid here, this kid here, this kid here, and it has a complete domino effect. So I look at that with I thought that was a big thing early in the season for you this year. And then I'll never forget the 2 years ago when Rockridge played Sherrard, because I was listening to the game. I had the night off, but I went over to see Coach Elder's team play at Ridgewood, and I was listening to that game between Rockridge and Sherrard, and I'm like, man, if the Tigers can hang on and win this game, this is going to catapult them to a wonderful season. And I know you look at, you know, sometimes you can magnify and say, well, it comes down to 3, 4, or 5 plays. And I just look at those two things. If that's a win that game that night, I think I'm like, the Tigers are playing week 10 definitely now. And then I even think last year with that type of thing happening with a kid like that getting hurt. So, I mean, long story short, and injuries are part of the game, but you have to feel you're pretty close, right? And you want numbers and you want health, but and you love kids' attitudes. You know, just give us an update on the Sherrard Tiger football program entering fall of 2025. Can't believe it's fall of 2025 we're talking about already.
Yeah, I think those are two pretty good examples that you bring up. A couple years ago, battled Rockridge and just came up a little bit short. And I'm never, this play cost us, over the course of four quarters. We weren't good enough that night. You know, were we close? Did we feel like we almost kind of had them on the ropes? He had the ball, I think, if I remember right, with maybe two different chances to drive down it if we would have scored, make it a two-score game. And, in those situations, obviously, you tip your cap to them because they kept battling too. But, yeah, you know, that would have been a huge win for our program that we just fell just a little bit short. And, last year it was the injury bug, and, you know, you never want to make excuses, and I'm certainly not doing that, but gosh, we just had more than our fair share, I thought, last year. I'm pretty sure we played Monmouth-Roseville with 5 2-way starters out.
Wow.
That particular week. And I think we had 2 or 3 2-way starters out. Brody Bender, senior captain for us, went out like the first or second series of week one, I think. We had already lost the weekly kid who was a 2-way starter for us. So, Carter Brown, obviously a stud for us that missed a few games, a couple games, I think game and a half or whatever it was. We just had more than our fair share. And like you said, at the small school level, especially, you know, sometimes one leads to two or three guys playing out of position, and maybe a sophomore, or in our case, even a freshman that, going to be good football players, but would we have preferred to keep them at that developmental stage at the fresh soft level? Absolutely. So, we're close, but we're not there yet. So keep grinding away and see if we can get this thing turned around.
Well, you speak about, you know, the injuries there, and obviously when you're dealing with kind of a numbers crunch, like so many schools are, it's such a trickle down effect, and it spreads where you mentioned they're playing a game with, you know, 5 2-way starters out, where that's not really, you know, 5 kids hurt. It feels like you're missing 10, yeah. You know? So, when you have to deal with that, I know last year I kind of threw the JV schedule for you into disarray too, where he had to cancel a bunch of games because he had to bring a bunch of kids up to play, you know, at the varsity level. So speaking about that challenge too, where you want to keep those younger kids engaged and get them, you know, to play in games too, but you got to, of course, put the varsity program in team first. I mean, how do you try to balance all of that where you're trying to give everybody an experience to want to, you know, come back and play again next year and 2 years and 3 years down the line?
Yeah, that's been really difficult in all honesty. And something that we're really working hard on this off season is keeping kids. I've always taken a lot of pride in the programs that I've been a part of as a head coach or an assistant that a lot of times I think just get us the kids, and let us be around them. And, you know, then if we lose them at that point, that's on us. But sometimes we struggle just to get the kids there to begin with. But now I'm honestly taking a little hard look in the mirror because we are losing some kids. And that's tough, obviously, to see. You know, some of them for very various different reasons and things like that. But, you know, some of them come out as freshmen and, you know, they don't get the time, the reps, you know, the fresh soft games that we'd all love for them to have. And, it is tough. It's tough for a 15-year-old kid to keep coming every single day, knowing that we may or may not play Monday night. So, that's been something that we've worked really hard on here the last couple of years, trying to find different ways to keep those kids interested. We've got some new and exciting things hopefully planned for some of those younger kids in our programs for this coming fall even. So something we're still, it's a work in progress. You know, that I don't think there's no magic potion or anything like that for anybody. I think a lot of these small schools, as we've said, with the numbers issues, they're facing a lot of the same situations and circumstances we are.
Well, I tell you this though, I've heard you talk about this. The league is on solid footing. I mean, we've seen that really with Mercer County now in the track, and there's been a lot of buzz, I think, in, you know, most of the sports, and specifically, you know, football with our first experience with Mercer County in the league. I've really liked kind of the personality from the league with, you know, basically all of the geographic rivals in this area all getting a crack at one another during the season. I think it's been pretty awesome. So I'm glad to see that continuing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Mercer County's it's a perfect fit. It's a natural fit. It keeps us involved. You know, as Sherrard, obviously, it gives us another one of those really close local rivalries. You know, I would personally, selfishly, and I don't make these decisions, and I don't want to have that responsibility either, but gosh, I sure would love to see Rockridge, Sherrard, Orion, Mercer County all playing conference games, yeah, not crossover games, but, you know, giving us opportunities where those games are always going to be fun. You know, those local rivalries, they're going to mean a little bit more regardless, but to be in the same conference and potential conference championship implications, it just would add that little bit of extra something special to those rivalries. But it's, as you said, I think the conference is on good footing right now, and we've got a lot of fun games and exciting rivalries that are back now.
And again, we're talking with Sherrard football coach Brandon Johnson this morning. Speaking about that, you know, like you touched on there, the football conference division shakeup is a little bit different than the rest of the sports, because in football they go by enrollment, where the rest of the sports, it's basically geography, east and west, when you split it based on division. Do you see, has there been any conversation about going back to, you know, a geographical based football shakeup, or do you think it's pretty set on the, you know, enrollment based right now? Has there been any talk about anything like that?
Not that I'm aware of, but you know, I don't always get or nor do I need some of that information.
That's just stuff we always want to talk
right
about.
one thing that I felt at Anawan Weathersfield, I was there for 10 years, and I think we were in four different conference makeups, yeah, in 10 years. And unfortunately, I think that's another byproduct of small schools, yeah, and the changing landscape, the co-ops, the consolidations, the drop into 8-man and stuff like that. You know, I'm happy with where we're at right now as a conference. But I wouldn't put money that it's going to be a long-term solution. You know, 10 years down the road, is this what it's going to look like? I hope so. But I don't know that I'd put money on it. I think that's just, unfortunately, the nature of things right now. Now, once we kind of get things leveled out maybe a little bit, I still think eight-man football is new enough that there's going to still be some movement, you know, maybe co-ops breaking up and deciding to go separately to eight-man. You know, that's just one example. But, you know, I still think stuff like that is new enough that there's still going to be some shakeup. There's always going to be probably conversations, at least. You know, I'm happy with where we're at. I've never been too awful big on, too concerned about who we play. You know, we're close enough enrollment wise. We're close enough geographically. My big thing is I would love to see those local rivalries stay and continue and get as much meaningful games like that as we possibly can. And from there, you know, send me wherever on whatever night and let us play whatever time. We're not too concerned about that, but those local rivalries I think are really important at small school level especially.
And I think for me, the eight-man game, I think the growth is kind of plateaued now. I think it's not that they're not going to experience another significant growth movement until the IHSA and the Illinois Eight-Man Football Association come to agreement and say the IHSA is assuming oversight or the Illinois Eight-Man Football Association gives up oversight to the IHSA. I know those conversations probably are forthcoming, and that's when I think that's when you're going to see the next movement, because I think they've been hovering around 30 teams really the past couple of the years. But I know as I talk to more and more people, you know, and some old, you know, school people say, hey, that, you know, eight-man is the way to go if you really want to maintain some of this ultra small school identity. So, you know, that I think that's yet to be seen. And let's face it, you know, there are other challenges that small school districts face other than, you know, hey, we're going to go eight-man football or 11-man football. But, you know, I digress. That, you're honest about it. I mean, there's never going to be, and I hope there is, like you said, but folks, there ain't never going to be stability in small school conferences. It just doesn't work that way because there's always at least one school or two, and I'm not mad about it, looking at the back channels for the best opportunity for them. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just what it is, because it takes just one school, right, to make some conference move, and then that is the domino for all the other conferences. And with all the other things in play with co-ops, enrollment, other demographics, in this part of the state is always going to be something that impacts that, I guess.
Yeah. I wanted to get Coach Johnston's opinion on one more thing before we probably can let him go, because he's been here for almost an hour. I know he said he's got one of his
soccer
kids
practice.
Birthday party to
oh,
get
birthday
to today.
Birthday party, yeah. Geez.
But, you know, the big news out of the IHSA a couple weeks ago, they updated their enrollment classification policy. So for football, you know, the waiver process for private schools is a little bit different now. So that 1.65 multiplier can only be waived if a school has not won a playoff game over a three-year period. It previously was you had to have, you know, at least, I think, three wins over 2 years to be ineligible for petitioning for the waiver. Now the process a little bit different. Just what'd you think of the change? You think it's a good change, bad change? Just what's your reaction to it?
I'm not sure.
Right.
It's a change, and I'm certainly happy to see that. In my opinion, it was very obvious something needed to be done. And I know some of these conversations, as many people know, the football specific aspect of it, it's been a conversation for several years. It was very glaring after this year's state championship games, you know, to a lot more people. Yeah. You know, most of us that follow the sport and IHSA very closely know that it wasn't just like all of a sudden all these private schools won state championships this year and now we have a problem. This is something that's been in discussions for several years. So in my personal opinion, I think it was any change to the process, there needed to be a change, and I certainly welcome something new, something different. I'm not a part of any of those discussions, so I don't know what all factors were considered and stuff like that. But hey, it's a change. You know, we put people in those positions that we trust to make those decisions for us. So, I'm certainly going to support them. And, kind of goes back a little bit, at least my opinion on this goes back a little bit to what I said. You know, we're not going to spend too much time worried about other people. We've got our own things that we're working on, and try to be the best version of the Sherrard Tigers that we can, and whatever that looks like, opponent wise, scheduling wise, we try not to put too much stock in that. But yeah, it's a change, and I certainly welcome that, because I do think it needed to be addressed in some way, shape, or form.
Did you like football enrollment? Were you playing in that era, or was that, football enrollment is basically kind of the, long story short, is kind of just basically the average enrollment of the opponents you play. And that was applied to not only non-boundaried, but public schools as well. I always liked that for specifically the sport of football and maybe not anything else. And I think football, can operate maybe on its own kind of set of rules in regards to that, because it brings the most discussion. I mean, do you think that is an opportunity to look at something like that, or you just want to see what happens with this latest move by the IHSA?
Yeah, I think at this point, I personally wouldn't want to see anything drastic done anytime soon. Let's see how this plays out. I think, to me, stuff like this and similar to like the conference realignments and stuff like that, there's always going to be discussions on this, I believe. So let's give it some time. Let's give it a few years at least, see how things play out. Is it the answer? I'm not sure yet. I think we need to see maybe a couple, two to 4 years cycle at least, go through before we really make any other drastic decisions, in my opinion, at least. Let's see how it shakes out first.
So I still think my argument is, it wasn't that non-boundaried schools won in football this year. Did you say 7 out of 8? Is that what it was?
Yes.
It was because Belleville-Altoff just throttled the 1A competition. I think that led to the change more than anything. I think that was the significant big outcry of what really necessitated the move. Now, a lot of people will say it was 7 out of 8, but I still think that was the outlier of the storyline of, you cannot let a school like that play 1A football ever again. End of story.
I think that's part of it for sure. And if those state championship games would have all been, like 30 to 27 games, would we be in the situation that we're in right now? Mm-hmm. Even if those same schools won, if they were close football games, would we have been so adamant about change? I'm not sure. I don't think probably it would have been. But the fact that they won 7 out of 8 and the convincing fashion that I think every one of those games was right. In, or almost everyone, it just magnified, again, something that has been on the table and been discussed for several years, probably.
Now, did you play a non-boundary school in any of your 10 years in the postseason at Anawan-Weathersfield?
We played Sterling Newman.
Okay.
And we did not play very well against them.
Well, and I don't think anybody really complains about them, because they basically have been a small school conference team for their entire existence.
Yeah, my last year there, the fall of 2018, we played Aurora Christian.
Now, was that Don Beebe coaching then or not?
Not Don. It was
his brother.
Yeah. We didn't play a lot of those non-boundary schools that I can think of, just those two off the top of my head, at least.
And that's the other thing, and I know we'll let him get out of here, is the we talk about the changing demographic, and a lot of it, we always, in our little world, we talk about enrollment as it relates to rural schools. But I think one of the really crazy storylines when you watch now, well, you see the massive declining enrollment in, I'll say that the Catholic schools, non-boundary schools, their enrollment is plummeting. But then you see this enrollment situation where the public schools in Chicago, their enrollments are crashing, and you're seeing so many of those Chicago public schools now that are playing in 1A regionals in the 4-class sports. And then you're seeing, a lot of Chicago Public League schools, if they qualify for postseason football, they're playing like 1A and 2A. And I think that's kind of been a crazy storyline here, with especially in about the last 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's different factors in different parts of our state, obviously. And Chicago, of course, is very different. But You know, even around here, what I've noticed, you know, like for me, when I was at A&O on Weathersfield, for example, we would have kids where, you know, maybe from a split family where mom lives on the Weathersfield side and dad lives on the Kewaunee side or something like that. And, you know, some of those kids going back and forth during the school year, you know, I don't think that we see it quite as much out this way, but, you get a little bit closer to the Quad Cities and you've got a kind of a similar situation, even with like Illinois, Iowa with, you know, kids with parents on each side and stuff like that. You know, obviously you've got, you know, I don't know that we see it again quite as much, but like something like the Arsenal where you've got military families that move in and out of your school. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's always going to be, you know, a little bit of, you know, fluid movement with some of those things. And, again, I certainly don't have any, you know, brilliant ideas, I don't think. You know, I certainly welcome the discussion and, you know, welcome, you know, when change is needed, and a lot of people I think would agree with this current football situation, you know, hey, let's try it out. Yep. The people that make those decisions came up with this, so you know, I'm all for it. Let's try it out and see what happens.
Well, I know what August is 4 months away, Brandon Johnson. Yeah. We're getting set for the 2025 football season in a few short months, I guess. So we'll let you get to the birthday party, right? I know I'm sure your kids are like, come on, Dad, get home. We got to get ready to go. So really appreciate the time. A lot of, you know, good talk today. A lot of fun topics covered. So appreciate you making the trip to Aledo, Coach Brandon Johnston.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me and the opportunity, especially to talk Sherrard core leadership and the great things that we're doing for our kids at Sherrard. It's been an awesome program. It's a little bit of a labor of love, I think, for me, but I've really enjoyed it. And I think our kids are, you know, exposed to some really awesome things right now. So thanks for letting me talk about it.
Yeah, and look, again, for our listening audience, it's worth your time to visit the Facebook page, Sherrard Core Leadership, and look at what's going on at these great public schools like Sherrard. Well done to Coach Johnson. Thanks for coming in. And before you know it, they'll put the tee on the ball on, what is it, August 30th or whatever opening day is, and we'll be broadcasting the high school football game.
Not soon enough.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Coach.
Yeah, more coming up on WRMJ.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Are you ready for your teen to get their license? At Country Financial, they know it's scary when you see your kids back out of the driveway for the first time. If you know your young driver has the proper protection from Country Financial, it's a little easier. Contact your local Country Financial representative to chat about car insurance today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Policies issued by Country Mutual, Country Preferred, and Country Casualty Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Looking for the perfect fit? 6140 Run in downtown Galesburg has you covered. From top brands like Hoka, Brooks, Saucony, Diadora, Wolverine, Red Wing, and more, we have the ideal shoes for running, walking, or everyday comfort. Right now, enjoy special savings on Birkenstock footwear. Don't miss out on this limited time offer to step into comfort and style. Visit 6140 Run at 185 West Main Street, downtown Galesburg. Your feet will thank you.
It's the WMJ Sports Line on a Saturday morning from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Aledo. Thanks to Brandon Johnston again, Sherrard educator, Sherrard head football coach, an enlightening conversation with Coach Johnston this morning. All right, let's recap a little bit of what's going on this week. Had a good high school softball game on the airwaves the other night, the number one ranked team in 1A going toe-to-toe with an unbeaten Sherrard Tiger program down in Stronghurst, Illinois. And the big headline this week is cell phone service worked in Stronghurst.
Well, internet service.
Yeah, okay, internet. So that's how you got that thing to work down there.
I guess
always
so.
A little bit shaky. It was great, I know. And I always love to give a tip of the cap to, you know, school districts who go out of their way to work with you. West Central, I love it, man. You really worked with us to make that thing work down there.
Appreciate them a lot.
So
absolutely.
Does it start at the top with Stacy Day, then goes to Jason Kirby, and then
Joel Zeiser. I love him. He was hilarious.
I love names with Z's. Joel Zeiser. It's tough to say.
And then their girls basketball coach, Coach Klossing, was running the scoreboard for them. So, yeah, they all were helping set everything up. They had a nice table for me. It was in Stronghurst. Yeah, it was great.
How good of an athlete is Nadia Anderson?
She's impressive, man. Yep.
Well, I know a wrestling kid, you know, and I remember even when she didn't start wrestling, I think, in maybe till her sophomore or junior year. Like, she played, or I think may even been in the starting lineup as a freshman for the basketball team at Sherrard that was really good, you know, in that era, of course, too. So that's the type of athlete she is. And then I know decided to run cross country, said, hey, I want to try that sport. So you got to love kids like that. But what an ultra competitor. And she's going where? She'll play Division I softball.
Southeast Missouri State, I believe.
All right.
SEMO.
So, and she hit a home run with a game on the line, right?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was 4-4, top of the seventh. Like you mentioned, West Central, you know, preseason number one in 1A softball from the Illinois Softball Coaches Association. It was a really fun game, really well played by both teams. And, you know, scores 4-4 going into the seventh inning, and Nadi Anderson hit a solo homer to right field to lead off the top of the seventh in a 3-1 count, you know, hit it really hard and, you know, cleared the fence by probably, you know, 20, 25 feet. So, yeah, she got all of it, and against a really high-level pitcher like Addie Seitz from West Central, awesome for, you know, her to be able to kind of push them over the hump. And they're off to a great start. I mean, 7-0, they've picked up some nice wins. They beat, I think, Moline, they beat Sterling this season, and, you know, obviously the big win over West Central. Should be a fun year. We've talked about it, you know, I think softball on the track West, really competitive. We talked about this last week when we had Dustin Murray on with Mercer County. I mean, you know, Sherrard 7-0, Mercer County 7-0 right now, I think, too. Rock Ridge has lost just once, and we know the pedigree they have. And I think Riverdale is 7-2 right now, and they picked up a really nice win over, you know, Morrison, and they beat Sterling earlier in the season, too. So, yeah, it should be fun. I know Rock Ridge and Sherrard play in both baseball and softball twice this week, Monday and Thursday. So kind of hit the ground running in the conference season, I guess. But yeah, it was a huge win, I think, for Sherrard on Thursday to beat a team like West Central.
And then, so we'll have the softball game Monday.
And the baseball game Thursday.
Well, that'll be a huge matchup Monday then right off the bat in the softball conference. So give me a scout then. You've seen, you know, the Tigers play. You've seen Rock Ridge play. You have seen Mercer County play. So what about the assessment of those three teams as you mix it up here, man? Look at Dustin Murray. Listen a little bit closer to the radio this morning.
I think that, boy, it's hard because you just don't know at this point what the strength of schedule is like for everybody. I'm disappointed that game with Rock Ridge and Ridgewood got canceled last night, because, you know, Mercer County, their big win was against Ridgewood earlier in the season, and Ridgewood season opener, you know, is the defending 1A state champions. But they're just 3-3, and I know Ridgewood lost a game to Fulton, I think, and Fulton, you know, got beat by Sherrard 18-2. So it's still kind of figuring out what the strength of schedule for everybody has been so far. I mean, I think watching, you know, every team in person so far, like 1-9, I've been most impressed with Sherrard's lineup. I think pitching-wise, I thought Sherrard's two pitchers, Danny Nepple and Savannah Hogger, looked really good on Thursday against West Central, and they've done a good job limiting runs. I think they've given up less than 2 runs per game so far this season through 8 games. Rock Ridge is Rock Ridge. I mean, you know, I think they're 5-1 right now. Their only loss is to Rock Island. The thing for them, though, is they just got to kind of, you know, adjust to life without Kendra Lewis, where they're, you know, they'll probably never have a pitcher like that ever again, that, you know, is just going to come out there and, you know, allow, you know, 1-2 runs every day. So they're still good. I like how Taylor Dietrich looks in the pitcher circle. Their lineup, I think there's still some question marks at the bottom half of it, because they've got, you know, so much youth, and Same thing with Mercer County, where, you know, the top of their lineup, I think 1 through 4 is really, really good. They've got the two top end pitchers, but some question marks throughout the rest of their lineup early in the season, at least. And I think they've probably, of the three teams we're talking about, have played, you know, the weakest schedule to this point so far. So those will be fun games for sure. I know Mercer County opens the conference season with Orion, which they should, you know, in softball, get 2 wins in those games for sure. But yeah, once they play, you know, those games, Mercer County versus Rock Ridge, Mercer County versus Sherrard, Sherrard versus Rock Ridge, all should be, you know, very competitive, I think. Should be a fun, you know, softball season for sure.
Now, you had a total small market radio move yesterday where you drove all the way over to Cambridge for the game and got there, and they said, well, the game is canceled. And that field in Cambridge, is that right in the middle of town then where they play?
Kind of, yeah.
Is like the courthouse as a backdrop?
No, separate park. But okay. Yeah, you got to go off to, it's kind of off the beaten path. I'd never been to Hand Park before. I told Coach Leander when she texted me the other day, and she's like, hey, just by the way, the game's in Cambridge at Hand Park. I said, that'll be my first time ever at Hand Park. So I did get to see it. I pulled up, and it was funny because, like, I hadn't heard yet. I mean, because the Rock Ridge bus was there, and I got there probably around, I don't know, 3:20 or so. And I parked, and she came walking up, and I rolled the window down. And she's like, well, we tried to play. And she's like, yeah, we just called it. I'm like, okay. She's like, sorry for having you drive all the way from Aledo. I'm like, no big deal, man. So, yeah, it was pretty funny.
And you said, we were talking off the air, now Ridgewood has been missing a kid early in the year,
right? She said, yeah, one of their players has been hurt and hasn't played yet.
Yeah, defending state champs. And then on the baseball side, you know, I see Sherrard, they play a lot of close games, and mm-hmm. I saw they play a 10-inning game this week, and then the Rockets, I know the Eagles have struggled with a little pitching, so, you know, what do you hear about baseball right now?
I think it's wide open in the conference, at least. I know, like, Sherrard with the top-end pitching with Aiden Taranas, I mean, it feels like, and I think I said this last week or a couple weeks ago, like, when he pitches, they're going to be, you know, in the game for sure. I think in that game against Farmington, he threw 6 1/3 innings and gave up, I think he was scoreless, and he might have only given up like 1 or 2 hits to them. And then, you know, Rock Ridge has, you know, 2 top level, you know, starting pitchers too, where I think for Sherrard, like offensively, you know, their lineup was so deep last year where I don't think it's quite as deep or as, you know, strong as it was the past couple of seasons. But just with the pitching, you know, they have, especially with Taranas, I think that's a team that, you know, it's probably, I would say, still the favorite in the league, at least early on. And I just think, you know, like Coach Basal, he's just had such success everywhere mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, running baseball programs, both at Mercer County, and then, you know, they've had a really good run at Sherrard since he's taken over. So excited to see them in person for the first, I guess we'll get to see him a little bit on Monday because the fields are right there. But then, you know, we'll get to broadcast the game on Thursday with Sherrard and Rock Ridge in baseball. I'm hoping Aiden Taranas pitches Thursday and not Monday so we can have him on the air, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, and then I know Rock Ridge top end, at least pitching-wise, coming into the season, had to feel pretty good with DeCarroll and Schweigen. What about the Rockets so far this season?
They've been kind of up and down, I think, a little bit. I mean, I know the one game against Alleman, they got really shelled against them and got beat like 17-4 or something, but I think it's the same thing where their lineup is just a little bit inconsistent, but when they are able to put DeCarroll and Schweigen out there pitching, I think they'll be in a lot of the games just because, you know, those kids have had so much success already, and it's kind of hard to believe that, like, Carson DeCarroll's still just a junior, and, you know, Colin Schweigen, we talked about that in the football season, him being just a sophomore still is pretty wild to think about. So, yeah, and I think, like you said, with Mercer County, it's kind of been, they're similar too, where, you know, like when Carson Boland pitches, they've been in games, and when he hasn't, you know, they really have struggled, I think, just to hang around with teams. So, and that's what makes baseball interesting, is it just is so different based on who's pitching for teams, you know, because a lot of smaller schools, you have maybe one top end pitcher, and then, you know, you look really good on those days, and then maybe some of the days when you don't have that kid going, you don't look maybe so good. So, a lot of, you know, up and down randomness in baseball, probably more than any other sport at the high school level, I think, from game to game.
Well, and that's why, you know, for doing this for so long, the postseason baseball seasons are always really intriguing to me because weather is such a big deal mm-hmm. for those schools that don't have a lot of pitching. But if they get the rain out on this certain day, especially with this pitching limitation, lo and behold, a kid's able to pitch maybe Monday early in the week, and then there's a rain out, and he gets to come back and pitch on Saturday in the regional championship, and it's like a 5 seed.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, they win, and then they go to the sectional semifinals. Their ace can't pitch, and they lose 13-1.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how crazy baseball can be. And then I'm happy to see, because I know Cale Breeden couldn't play football this year with that shoulder injury, and he set the school record for home runs.
Career home run record.
Yeah, with
12.
He surpassed, I forget, what's the old, Ryan Garrett.
Yeah.
Is a coach on the Eagle staff, so congratulations to Cale Breeden. Now, we get going right this week, finally with the outdoor season in boys and girls track. And then, man, that really flies by because we're about a month away then, basically, from the conference meets and then the, you know, the sectional track meet. So that the school year really starts flying when you get to the outdoor track season.
Yep. And then something else I saw this week on social media, I think it was Kenny Fry had the custom ball for Ryland Carton.
That.
Really cool. They gave him a custom. I think they got the game ball from the regional championship game that Ryland scored 45 in to set the new school record. Ken Fry had the previous record of 43 points. He had it customized, you know, with commemorating the 45-point performance. And I think they gave that to him at their boys basketball banquet on Wednesday. Really cool. And then I saw Ryland Carton and James Blackwell both will be playing collegiately at Carl Sandburg at the JUCO level next year. So that's pretty cool. That's the Brian Hutton-Sherrard Tiger pipeline.
Yeah,
right?
He's an assistant there,
and then
he's on their staff, technology coordinator at Carl Sandburg College. Good to see those two players, and then it'll be interesting to follow what their next step is outside of Carl Sandburg College. And, you know, we were at the state basketball tournament. We had Chris Schwarz on, IHSA assistant executive director, and he wasn't lying to us because he said that day that, hey, you're getting another bass fishing postseason assignment in the Mercer County area. And they released those this week. And I know we reported on that this week, but Mississippi River Pool 18 will serve as a site for the IHSA Bass Fishing State Tournament Series. And that Pool 18 runs from Lock and Dam 17 in New Boston to Lock and Dam 18 in Oquaka. And it's a regional format this year. So they've expanded that. It used to be just a sectional and then the state tournament. But because there's so many schools that have bass fishing teams now, they've added a regional level. So I think there are 30 regional sites, including Pool 18. And the schools that are in the Pool 18 regional, Mercer County, West Central, Illini West, Hamilton, Knoxville, Macomb, United, Sherrard, and Warsaw. And I think that takes place in mid-May. So good to see the area getting a bass fishing regional. They had the sectional last year. And then I was also talking to Chris Schwarz this week, and I didn't realize that, you know, the eSports series. And I was looking at the number of schools that participate. Now, eSports, for those people that don't know, they're like, what's eSports? Well, it's basically video games. So the IHSA offers a state series in that. I'm still kind of surprised that none of our local schools have an eSports series. And when I say local, like Rock Ridge, Sherrard, Mercer County, or Orion, because I see like Rova, they have an eSports team that is entered in the state tournament series, I think, like Stark County. So why is that? I know video gaming, that's still big around here, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't played Madden in a long time.
Yeah, that's one of the games you can win a state title.
Yeah.
So you can win a state title in 11-man, 8-man, and Madden.
They have 2K, right? I play 2K. I don't. Is 2K one of the sports they have on esports?
I
haven't looked,
look.
I guess, but I don't know. I'd love to kind of just observe what that like state tournament looks like in esports. They all do it in the same place.
So there is a, I want to say the sectional. So there's a sectional and then a state final. And the state finals are held at Evergreen Park High School, I think, is where that's at. And the local sectional is at Normal West High School. So like I saw Stark County, like I think Knoxville, Rova.
The Rebels are headed to Normal West.
There's some small schools. And I was looking and I'm like, oh, there's not yet a Sherrard. We should ask Coach Johnson about that. I didn't see a Sherrard Rock Ridge or Mirko or Orion, but there are a lot of small schools that are entered in the state tournament series.
And talking about postseason stuff, now they put out the postseason sites and assignments for baseball and softball this week. So we can run through those real quick before we take our final break. So baseball, the local subsectional, which again, you know, we talked about this in the basketball season too, It splits into two regionals where the teams that get seeded 1 through 4 go separate. So 1 and 4 go to the same regional, 2 and 3 go to the same site, and then the rest of the teams go to the closest site geographically. So in baseball, in the local subsectional, the two regional sites are at Monmouth-Roseville and Bureau Valley. And then the teams that make up the subsectional are Mercer County, IVC, Kewaunee, Knoxville, Bureau Valley, Monmouth-Roseville, Orion, Princeton, Sherrard, Hall, and Rock Ridge. And then the sectional site is at IVC, which is where it was last year in Chillicothe. And then the super sectional is at Geneseo. I think, you know, Hall obviously has really good baseball pedigree. You know, I think IVC normally pretty solid in baseball too. And then you look like Sherrard, Rock Ridge, Mirko all in there as well. So interesting when you look at that. Just any reaction to the baseball path?
IVC should host the sectional every year. They have stadium seating. It's a baseball facility, a true baseball facility. And, of course, they have great heritage and history with their program. And then I think Geneseo, that's a pretty good mm-hmm. baseball facility. And they're always interested in hosting the postseason. So that doesn't surprise me. And, you know, people, a lot of times, they always complain, why is the IHSA giving, you know, these sites to this school or that school? Well, who applied? Right. It's based on applying for postseason sites. And if your school doesn't apply for it, you're not going to get it.
And I like Monmouth-Roseville's baseball facility. Oh, that's a great baseball facility. It's a good regional host for sure. And then so softball locally, this is what the subsectional looks like. I'm a little bit disappointed because the two regional sites are Brimfield and Farmington. Those won't be very fun trips. But the teams that locally that are in that subsectional, Mercer County, Brimfield, Elmwood, they co-op. I think that they host it, though, at Brimfield. Then Farmington, Knoxville, LVC, not IVC, Monmouth, Roseville, Orion, Riverdale, Alleman, Sherrard, and then Rock Ridge.
What's the sectional site again?
IVC for softball, too.
No kidding.
Yeah, so they're both in Chillicothe, and then the super sectional has not been announced yet for this one, so we don't know. Traditionally, it's gone to Eastside Center at East Peoria, and that hasn't been announced as a host yet, so maybe that's where it'll end up being. But the other three super sectional sites have been like announced. Just the one that locally our teams would feed into has not been for softball. So what do you think of the softball makeup? That's a pretty competitive. I know Knoxville's had a good year. Brimfield was really good last year. They had a really good pitcher that was a sophomore. And then, you know, we know, like we've talked about, Riverdale, Rock Ridge, Sherrard, and Mirko all solid too. So that's a pretty good top 5 or 6 in that subsectional complex for softball.
Yeah, well, Brimfield's always had a great softball program because they have kids that either play in the Peoria area ASA circuit or even the Quad Cities ASA circuit. And even though there's, you know, there's some significant distance to those regional locations, Brimfield has a great softball facility where they play at. And then the same with Farmington. I think Farmington has a great athletic complex in general with their school because they've hosted some postseason baseball and postseason softball. And I know on the, you know, the many runs for Rock Ridge and postseason softball, they won a sectional at Brimfield. We were there. And they also won a sectional in Farmington. We were there broadcasting. So they've kind of been in the circuit. But I'm surprised if Eastside Center is not hosting a postseason site. Man, that'll be the first time in I don't know how many years, because they were there, you know, a longtime host of the state finals. And then even after they didn't get the state final contract, they've been hosting, you know, basically kind of the super sectional format. And I love Eastside Center. That's a true great softball venue playing into that hillside.
So
there.
Just
hillside
looking,
center,
Eastside Center has a 3A sectional.
Okay.
Let me look real quick on the 4A to see if they have a super sectional there. No, they don't. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're changing that. They don't want to do the super sectional anymore, but I guess we'll have to see, right? So anything else you want to talk about as we, I mean, it's crazy. You know, I was talking about this with Coach Johnson when he came in before we came on the air, but like the spring sports season feels like just goes so fast. You know, we're like, we're only probably a month and a half away from the postseason starting already.
No, the only thing I wanted to bring up. So when you're talking about postseason assignments, it was funny. I know yesterday we were eating lunch and the game was still on at the time. Ridgewood and Rock Ridge, and but the skies were kind of ominous, and it was, you know, a chilly day with kind of winds blowing, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I'm glad I'm not broadcasting this game today. And you said, well, Coach Cook, he's going to help broadcast. And like within 2 minutes of you saying that, he called, and I'm like, oh, gee, I wonder what he's calling about. And he was telling, yeah, I just can't go over there. And I'll never forget the 1 year, the most miserable conditions I ever broadcast in was in Tremont. The 1 year they were hosting the softball sectional, and the location at Tremont, like there's nothing but a fence, and then the concession stand runs like maybe 150 yards away where you have to run the extension cord that long. And then there's no cement around the backstop where you're just running your equipment into the grass back behind the backstop, setting your own table. And then, you know, basically it's mud as the day progresses. And we broadcast that whole day. And I know how miserable Coach Cook was that day broadcasting.
I know the most miserable I've been. And it was actually, I guess, ironically enough, it was at the state softball final, which that's always, the weather is just awful to do that. Because you have to sit outside.
Metal bleachers.
And it's like 100 degrees every time, and you're afraid the equipment's going to get fried.
And it is.
And it does. And then, so Friday of the state games last year, you know, we had Ridgewood and Rock Ridge there both covering. So Friday, just brutally hot all day, and we were there for two games, and that's the game, if you remember, that Rock Ridge went 10 innings in. So it's just like, God, I need to get inside. I'm going to pass out. And then the next day, Saturday, for the 1A state championship game and then the 2A third place game, so we had back-to-back broadcasts. It was me and Coach Nelson. And the 1A game, the state championship game, raining the whole time, and there's turf there, so they just played through it, and you're broadcasting outside, so I like have to cover up all the equipment with trash bags just getting poured on. It's like cold at this point. And then basically right in between games, it stops raining. The sun comes out and it's like 95 degrees. And it was brutally hot during that Rock Ridge third place game. That was awful. Oh my gosh. It was just, I can't believe I didn't get like really, really sick, because I went from being freezing to like sweating. It was awful.
Well, and that's just because the way that diamond faces, you're looking into the sun the whole day. But it's great to get to that level. And
it is,
we've been fortunate that the Rockets have got us to the final game of the season so many times in softball.
And I'll never forget the year before, two seasons ago in 2023, it was the hottest probably it's ever been. It was like, I think, 102 degrees. It was on the first day. The semifinal day, and there was a radio crew there that was doing one of the 2A teams before, and this is one of the funniest things I have ever seen
in my
life.
This is definition of small
market
radio.
This is so small market radio. So there's the guy's doing the play-by-play, and then he's got a color guy with him, and you can tell he's struggling because it's so hot. And this is the game, I think Rock Ridge, that they played like 3:30, so this game started at 1, so it's like right middle of the day, brutally hot. And you know, they brought a box fan trying to cool their equipment off, and the guy's doing the play-by-play, and it's like middle of the bottom of the third inning, and the team they were covering was getting just drilled by Beecher. So it's like maybe 6-1, 7-1 early, and the game feels like it's already kind of out of reach. And the guy doing the play-by-play, they're sitting right next to me. I can hear him. He's like, you know, it's like, you know, strike two, and then the color guy says something, and then the the play-by-play guy goes, he's like, oh, man. He's like, I can't do this. And then he just drops his head.
Where are you going? Like,
and he gets up and he walks away in the like in between pitches. So he leaves this guy, the color guy, with him, who clearly like isn't an employee of the station, just is like a guy that's coming with him to do the game.
Where he
so
go?
He's now stuck doing the play-by-play, and he clearly like doesn't really know the names of the kids on the other team. Oh, so he's like, oh, my gosh. It was like, it was so funny. And he was gone for probably 3 innings, like 3 full innings he was gone. Cause like a couple, like probably, you know, 15 minutes later, I went to get a water before we went on the air, and he was just standing like in the shade down the line. I'm like, what is this guy doing? Oh man. It was really funny.
All right, well, let's take a break, and we'll wind down the WMJ Sports Line from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studio on WMJ and WMJ.com.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
You finally have your dream home. Now you need the right insurance to protect it, because when it comes time to file a claim, you don't want any surprises. Talk to a Country Financial representative to find out if you have the right protection. They can help you understand your options and select coverages to meet your needs.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Home insurance policies issued by Country Mutual Insurance Company, Country Casualty Insurance Company, or Country Preferred Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Looking for the perfect fit? 6140 Run in downtown Galesburg has you covered. From top brands like Hoka, Brooks, Saucony, Diadora, Wolverine, Red Wing, and more, we have the ideal shoes for running, walking, or everyday comfort. Right now, enjoy special savings on Birkenstock footwear. Don't miss out on this limited time offer to step into comfort and style. Visit 6140 Run at 185 West Main Street, downtown Galesburg. Your fee will thank you.
Winding down the WRMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Aledo. Many thanks to Brandon Johnston, Sherrard head football coach, and we would call him the club sponsor of Sherrard Core Leadership. You can follow that online. Again, offering that to both junior high and high school students. A credit to him for bringing something like that to Sherrard Junior Senior High School. Looking at local programming, Ty mentioned earlier in the program, we have the Rockridge Sherrard Series this week with the softball game Monday, and that's at the Joel Brunsfeld Complex at Sherrard High School, who I'll never forget. I always bring up the story. I was at the ribbon-cutting ceremony for that many years ago, and Joel Brunsfeld, the late, great Joel Brunsfeld, the first thing he said, I was shaving this morning and cut myself and I bled purple, former longtime teacher and coach in the Sherrard School District, and a good, good man. And he'd like to talk about bass fishing and hunting, because he really loved that, former Illinois Department of Natural Resources director as well. Good dude. And then Thursday, the baseball game over in Edgington between Sherrard and Rockridge. We did how many Sherrard-Rockridge games are we going to do this year?
Yeah, football, two boys basketball. I think we did both girls basketball games, and then we're going to have one softball, one baseball game on.
So I was thinking about, they're probably, are they on a collision? So the postseason is going to be tremendous then in softball.
Oh, yeah. Because
you look
it'll
at the
really
potential collision of maybe a sectional final of two local teams.
Yeah, that'd
playing.
Be awesome.
Yeah, that's going to be a hotly contested postseason in high school softball.
This is too bad none of the sites are like that close locally. But
and then the bad thing about that too, because those regional games are played during the week, so it's almost impossible for anybody other than the parents to go to those games. But if the championships, I believe, are still played on Saturdays.
Sometimes softball plays Friday afternoons.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
and then, yeah, so maybe we'll see if some of those games can get, maybe there'll be later starts. And I'm not even sure about the lights at some of those.
I don't know either.
But then also, you know, the outdoor track season starts to really heat up this week, too. So we'll get to all of that and all those results on the sports desk each morning. And, of course, our high school sports spotlight programs during the week as well.
I just counted. I believe we've got seven more sports lines this school year.
Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
Been a fast year, and then before you know it, like what we've already been talking about, the 2025 football season a little bit.
I don't know what today. We've got planned for next week, but in a couple of weeks, we'll have Katie Hassan and hopefully Tom Hassan in here, too. I reached out to them on April 19th. I think they'll come in, or at least Katie will. She said her line was, I'm trying to talk Tom into coming too. He's not convinced he wants to. So now we're all putting the pressure on him, and now everyone's going to reach out and say, Tom Hassan, come on. So if you're listening, tell Tom Hassan needs to come on the air with us on April 19th.
He needs
Katie.
To. So you talk about a life of serving youth for both of those.
So they'll be in 2 weeks on the 19th.
Yeah, and that's great. And I know, I can't remember if another, it's all circling back to Cambridge. We have a Cambridge grad in Brandon Johnston and Katie Hulene, now Katie Hassan, and Tom, of course, great graduates and very proud graduates of Cambridge. And I remember Katie told me the great story about the one postseason game she played in Alexis. And you know, her path included Rova, I think, is where she got her start in education. And then I think Tom was down in Valley, Spoon River Valley, in Fulton County. He was a head coach down there, I think, right prior before coming to Aledo. And I love the videos they show of Coach Hassan. You know, he's an elementary school PE teacher, and you can just tell the kids absolutely love
how
that
could you
dude.
Not love
I know
him,
and, you know? And that's, you know, talking about what it's all about, education and impacting kids. So it'll be fun. He'll come on, I think. Coach Hassan will come on, so that'll be a great show as well. And we'll have then today we're into the Cardinal baseball, and of course the Cardinals play the Boston Red Sox in a rematch of the John Hoshut would say the 1967 World Series, but it would also be the 2004 World Series coming up. And then I think, you know, we've kind of been hitting at this a little bit, and we've announced it on some of our newscasts and sportscasts, you know, here earlier in the spring. But we'll be a radio affiliate in the fall of what professional football team?
The St. Louis Rams. Oh, I wish. Yeah. No, the Chicago Bears.
Yeah so that'll be nice to have. I think they have a quality radio network, so it'll be nice to have the Bears on this next fall, and hopefully for greater outcomes from the 2024 season to the 2025 season.
I think either last year or 2 years ago at the Illinois Broadcasters Association Awards, Jeff Joniak won the Chicago Market Sportscaster of the Year.
So.
And then I won Small Market.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're basically in the same category.
Twins. Yeah. All right. Well, again, Cardinal baseball later today, and then next week, man, two good games. The softball game between Rock Ridge and Sherrard Monday from the Joel Brunsvold Complex. Thursday, the baseball game over at Rock Ridge High School. That'll do it for the WRMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning. We're in the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Toledo for Ty Taylor, Jim Taylor, WRMJ Sports.
This has been Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Brought to you by Diamond Ag, your local ag retail supplier built from your local specifications with locations in Toledo, Alexis, and Knoxville. Your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, farm, or business by 6140 Running Galesburg. Your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes, and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots. And by Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. The preceding has been a presentation of WRMJ Sports, your high school sports voice of Western Illinois.